Willkommen zu Das ist Kunst, dem Podcast der Deichtorhallen Hamburg. Ich bin Jumoke Ulusani. In dieser Ausgabe spreche ich mit Abdulhamid Kircher. Der deutsch-türkische Künstler ist in Berlin geboren und in den USA aufgewachsen. Mit seinem Fotografieprojekt Rotting from Within ist er vor ein paar Jahren bekannt geworden. Darin nähert er sich seiner eigenen Familiengeschichte an und seinem abwesenden Vater. Seine Arbeit versteht Kircher als fragmentarisches Familienalbum, in dem es um Patriarchat, Gewalt, Sehnsucht, Nähe und Versöhnung geht. Für die Ausstellung Rotting from Within, die im Rahmen der 9. Triennale der Fotografie Hamburg zu sehen ist, hat Kircher Fotografien, Texte und Archivmaterial zu einer großen Installation verbunden. Es ist ein sehr intensives Gespräch geworden, in dem Abdulhamid Kircher von seiner Faszination für das Dunkle und Abgründige erzählt, das komplizierte Verhältnis zu seinem Vater beschreibt und erklärt, wie er Fotografie als therapeutisches Werkzeug einsetzt.
I really just try to like make work that is also like helping me understand something or helping me process something.
Abdulhamid Kircher spricht fließend Deutsch, fühlt sich aber im Englischen sehr viel wohler. Deswegen haben wir das Gespräch auf Englisch geführt. Seit vielen Jahren schon arbeitet er an Rotting from Within. Ich habe ihn zunächst gefragt, wie es eigentlich dazu kam. Wenn euch der Podcast gefällt, empfehlt ihn gern weiter.
Rotting from Within started from a place that wasn't. It started when I was a teenager after my father got out of jail. And it didn't, you know, I was so young that I wasn't thinking of like, you know, projects or series or things like that. But it really just started from a place of like wanting to get to know my father, like this person who had been absent for most of my life. And it started from this place of just, you know, I had just started making photographs and I became so, especially living in New York and growing up in New York, I became so fascinated by this idea of like the underworlds or like these worlds that most people don't have access to. So I think when my father went to jail for attempted murder and drug charges, he was selling drugs since a teenager. And then, you know, at some point they caught up to him and he went to jail, and then when he got out, he was still very much in this world. And I think me being 16 and being so in, like, so captivated by this sort of underworld, I immediately became so drawn to him because he just had access. It was like immediate access to this world that usually takes a long time to maybe get access to. And so it started from this place where it was just sort of inspecting, like, you know, I just had immediate access to a world of drugs and prostitution and violence and all these probably things I shouldn't have been exposed to, but I was so fascinated by. So that's sort of where it started, you know, it really started. And if you look at the book, it's sort of, I don't know if you saw it, but like it has this sort of loose chronological order and you sort of see how I experience his world and then how the work changes and evolves into this new understanding. But it starts from a very pure place where I was just drawn to something, and that being my father's world. And maybe I should explain what else comes after, and then I'll explain the title. But I kind of have to. The title wasn't something that came to mind right away. The title was something that came later on.
Right. So maybe we do a step backwards, because you have a German mother, you have a Turkish father. We're speaking English, so yeah. You grew up in the USA. How did that come about? You just mentioned that there was a long time lapse. You didn't see your father.
Yeah.
So what
well,
was...
Well, my mom was 15. My dad was 19 when they had me. He was always sort of, you know, abusive to my mother. And then at some point we escaped and fled Berlin. And at that point he sort of lost his mind and really went off into the deep end, and then that's how he ended up, you know, getting arrested for all these things. But when that happened, my mom met my stepfather at some point, like in a club, because my stepfather was stationed in Germany. He was in the military. And
he was American.
Yeah, he's Puerto Rican.
All right.
But he grew up in New York. And yes, yeah, from New York. And yeah, so when they met, I was around 7 or something. And then we initially moved to like Wiesbaden first, because that's where he was stationed. And then we moved to New York when I was 8.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of... And then basically I would go back to Berlin every summer, because all my Turkish family and German family, they're all in Berlin. And then like my Turkish side is between Berlin and Turkey. But yeah, that's kind of... Yeah, and then my grandparents were Gastarbeiter, so they came in like the late 70s to Berlin. So like my father and his siblings were sort of the first generation to grow up in Berlin.
Right. So you said that that was also a way of describing your series, or maybe you just mentioned that that's an ongoing project. So this is not something which is like finished at that point. At this point, you're showing it. It is growing, actually.
Yeah, it's always evolving. I mean, I think when you make such personal work, especially about family and relationships within your family, like, you know, it's always going to evolve and change, and always, you know, it's about my family and me, and our relationships are constantly evolving, and people are passing away, and people are changing. And I think that's why it's so important, especially within the exhibition, for it to really have this sort of life of its own and really have the space to evolve. And that's why I try to treat the exhibitions like from scratch in a way. So I really try to, I don't like bringing in, you know, works that have been framed already, or certain, you know, I really try to go into the space and start from scratch. And I think that allows it to really be really reflective, and allows it to naturally evolve, where you don't put certain parameters around it. Or like, yeah, I can go more in depth into like the installation aspect, but like overall, I think that's a good way to sort of introduce it.
Right. So yeah. Do you say that in English? So that's always actualisiert, maybe your state of relationship at that point with your different family members who are...
Yeah.
But it's always the same pictures and they're new coming, or yeah, do you also take pictures out?
Yeah, I would like to think of it as like a living archive in a way, because it's not just my work. It's also family photographs I collect. So like every time I go to a new, you know, if I meet a new family member or a relative I haven't met before, and then, you know, I usually try to like dig into their archive, and then they'll let me have a bunch of the images. So I've slowly, like while making my own version of a family archive, I've also been like recollecting archive. So in the exhibition, you sort of get this amalgamation of everything, of this sort of archive that came before me, and then my own archive, and then also like my childhood drawings and my childhood objects and prints that I've made over the year. It's sort of like, it's basically like a collection of everything that has to do with this work somehow. And I make like, it's always a conversation between the past and the now in a way, because sometimes there'll be images that reappear that you've maybe seen in another exhibition, but it really, it's almost like, you know, like evolving onto itself in a way, and really exploring like new mindsets or new ideas, and not trying to just stay, you know, even when I come into the space, I come in with certain material, but then I also have a printer, like a, you know, a big physical printer there that I can make prints on the spot, or I have a scanner there where I can scan stuff and like sort of like think about ideas in the moment. Mm-hmm. So rather than me just playing like Tetris in the installation, I try to approach it more from a, yeah, just from a sort of more natural state. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me because I have an idea of how your images or your pictures look like. But how would you describe, or what would you say? What do we see in these images? I mean, a lot of different things, I guess, but we already talked about in Family Archive.
Yeah.
And we talked about your father. So is your father maybe the main figure, which is...
I mean, yeah, maybe I just sort of explain the work just from a more like, on a like chronological sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll probably make more sense to people. Basically, yeah, so it starts with this sort of documentation of my father's world. And then as time goes on, you know, as a teenager, you're a bit oblivious to a lot of what's going on around you, obviously. And I think as I got older and as the relationship with my father changed, I obviously always knew that he was this abusive person. But as I got older, I sort of naturally realized how terrible of a person he was and how stuck in his ways he was. And I think I had a lot of anger for, like, you know, towards him. And I think I spent a lot of time trying to change him or believing that he could change. And that's sort of the point where the work really evolves and changes into something else. So it starts with his world and almost like this idea of like visually, at least it looks like I'm idolizing him. And then it evolves into me trying to understand him and then hitting a wall, and then me trying to understand him through his relatives, his parents. I think that, so that's where the work really shifts. And when I start to spend more time in Turkey is when I hit this wall with him where I don't feel like I'm getting through to him, and he has no desire to change. So like, how can I try to understand this person that is not opening up to me? I go to the people, because he does, you know, he would say things like, I am the way I am because my father abused me as a kid. He didn't tell me he loved me. And, you know, there's a lot of, and that's what I said before, this like generational trauma is sort of the overarching theme, because I realized that so much of that trauma stemmed from the way he was abused by his father. And, you know, obviously my grandfather wasn't the same person when I spent time with him in Turkey, but I was able to see certain patterns or certain ways. Like my grandfather, he never, you know, my father would always say this thing where like any little crumb that was left on the table or on the floor, like my grandfather would just beat them for any little thing, like try to find any little thing. And when I spent time with him there, it wasn't like my grandfather was beating me, but I was able to see certain patterns and tendencies. Like it was this constant surveillance. Like my grandfather would just sit on his chair and just be observing every little thing I was doing and commenting on every little thing, or trying to make like put me down. And just little things like that made me realize to some degree of like what my father was experiencing and this sort of like surveillance he was living in. And naturally, I think when you grow up in a sort of environment like this, especially one that's religious, like my grandparents are very religious, you rebel and you're in this new city, and you know, there's just it's just a world that his parents didn't really understand and were obviously new to. And
he,
I think they like tried to create this like hyper control because they were in this new space and this new world where they had such little control because they're so new to it. So they try to hyper control their children, and then naturally the children are, you know, going against the grain.
Mm-hmm. So that opened you up for your father in a way also. You said you tried to change him, and then you saw what he was had to endure as a kid or growing up. And
yeah, I mean, it didn't, it's difficult when you know, at the end of the day, my father is a grown man, and his actions, like, even though I learned about his upbringing, at some point, that doesn't excuse your behavior.
Right.
And I think that's sort of what I came away with, is that I spent so much time trying to change him that I had to realize I just needed to let go. I just needed to understand that only he has the power to try to change himself. And if he doesn't put in any effort, then there's no point in me putting in any effort. So that's sort of where our relationship stands now.
Does he actually like the way you portray him?
He doesn't. This is like, people ask me this all the time. Like, oh, how does he, what does he think about the work? And he's such a narcissist and so egotistical that he can't see beyond himself. Like, when we had the exhibition in Berlin, it was sort of the first time the work was shown publicly, and he came, and he came with this insane, like, full Gucci, like, sweatsuit and, like, crazy sunglasses. He just came like this, like, superstar. And even though this work had so much trauma in it, like, all he could see was himself.
Mm-hmm. And that was enough.
There are times where, like, articles would come out and, like, he would be like, oh, like, why are you portraying me in this way? Like, why are you spreading my business online or something? And I'm like, he doesn't, like, see the bigger picture, or, like, the, you know, he just tries to hyper focus on these things that have to do with him, and that's it. There's nothing beyond that.
And is he maybe in a way also thankful for that? I mean, he has so much, like, so much stage to show himself.
I don't know. You know, he never told me he was, like, proud of me, or never, like, he never expressed these things. So,
was this something you were longing for?
I don't even think I was longing for it, because I wasn't expecting it. But I think because everyone is always asking me that question, it makes me feel like I needed to long for that or something.
Okay.
And I'm not like, it's nothing against you. I'm just saying, whenever I do, like, these talks, that every, like, 90% of the time, the question is, what does your dad think about this work? And obviously, naturally, that's a normal question. But it's always like, it always leads me to a point where I think the answer is, like, kind of like a letdown, because he doesn't, like, you know, react to the work in a way I think people would assume or something.
Right. But he lets you come very close to his life.
Yeah. I mean, he's a narcissist. He's obsessed with himself. So, like, it's fitting that he would let me document him in this way, because he wants to be the main character. Yeah.
So when he came out of jail, was it something that you had to portray him, or that you wanted to approach him through photography? Was it something that was totally clear to you? Or how did the first encounter, like, take place?
I mean, I think it was rooted in I think photography in the end is what allowed me to even, like, form a relationship with him. I think I used to have trouble with saying that, because it felt very manipulative or, like, very disingenuous. And over time, like, I've realized that, like, that idea is okay. And that if a certain medium is what allows me to get closer to people, that doesn't make our interactions fake. It just is the tool that allows me to enter a certain space, or drives me to a certain space. And yeah, so it started from this place where, like, photography was what drew me to my father. And is, like, I always like to think about, like, if I didn't have photography, I don't think our relationship would have ever evolved, and I don't know if I would have ever been drawn to get to know him. But then I think about, like, you know, then I don't think I would have spent the time I did with my grandparents, you know, all these things that sort of trickled down from that. I'm obviously really grateful for. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, while I do have this like very double-edged like relationship with photography, I am forever grateful for like, you know, what it's sort of drawn me to and what it's opened up for me.
We talked about your father and how he sees himself in these exhibitions, and if he's proud of you or proud of himself more probably. But what does your mother think about all this? How does she feel about?
I mean, she's like, you know, we kind of almost like we grew up together in a way. So she's like a super mom. Like her whole world revolves around her children. And I think when I first started making the work, it was very hurtful for her because from an outsider's perspective, it did look like I was idolizing him. And obviously, if your son that you raised is idolizing your abuser, like that's going to be hurtful. But I think over time, obviously, she understood why I was making this and why I needed to make it. And I think that's been the sort of, you know, the most eye-opening thing in our relationship is like her understanding me through my work and through my process. And yeah, obviously, she's super proud and like my biggest fan. But it was very difficult in the beginning. Yeah. And there was also like, so this is, I guess I just want to get into, because this sort of relates to the title. So Rotting From Within, the idea sort of came from my mother and I, like when I was a teenager, we got into some big argument and she ended up saying this thing where she was like, oh, you're behaving just like your father, or you're saying this just like your father. And in that moment, I was so struck by the idea that I could be or behave like someone that I didn't grow up with. And that put this thing into my mind. And this, you know, in that moment, I obviously didn't realize that, but like it put this sort of seed into my mind of realizing that I had all these tendencies and all this, you know, toxic masculinity inside of me that I was sort of fighting against. There were so many things that, because trauma is passed down, like, you know, genetically, that is something that stays inside of you. And I think the idea that I was fighting against this thing that I really had no control over was what led me to that title. Like this idea of me almost, you know, like becoming this toxic person and sort of like this thing that's eating away inside of me and making me this terrible person. So that's where like Rotting From Within. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense. No, but yeah.
It makes absolutely sense. Yeah. I think that's something a lot of people are afraid of, or is becoming their parents in a way, or becoming the dark side they experience from their parents in a way. And to like, have this thing in yourself and which comes out like a monster sometimes,
yeah,
is something I can really relate to. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really scary feeling. And, I think me making this work is me trying to undo that, is trying to undo this trauma that has been passed down from generation to generation, and making a conscious decision to try to be different and try to change. And that's where my work sort of stepped in. Like that's where photography and writing and all these things really stepped in for me, to become aware of myself and of my patterns. And yeah, and in the end, it's all this huge ball of like therapy in a way. Like every time I have these conversations with people or I share things with the world, my work is really, and it's, you know, it's a bit tricky because in a way it can become this idea of like trauma dumping, but for me, I really just try to like make work that is also like helping me understand something or helping me process something.
Right.
And I really try to come from that space every time. I really try to approach something with this pure intention. And yeah, it obviously leads to, because I suffered from a lot of trauma in my life, naturally it leads to me making traumatic work. But I've come to sort of just accept that and realize that like me making these things are also helping me become hopefully a better person and a better partner and a better son and yeah, friend.
So it's a way of cleansing in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it works.
Cleansing was actually my my Tumblr username. Yeah.
Yeah. Where you showed exactly these photos or
that, yeah, I mean that was where I first started. You know, that's where I even like found a lot of the imagery I became drawn to was through Tumblr. Like it was like the first time where the internet sort of had no filter and no algorithm and no, it really was this sort of open book. And I still have my blog, but it's interesting to scroll through it and see the kind of imagery I was drawn to. So much gore, so much darkness, so much like, yeah, I was just exposed to a lot of, you know, unfiltered things. And I think that's where my eye or my interest sort of developed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is that something, I mean, you described it like, let me say that term, maybe you don't like it, but and then please correct me, but is it maybe like a therapeutic tool, photography, to maybe like a filter, which, how do you say verhindern, which inhibits,
stops
things coming into your life, like the real time gory darkness?
Yeah, that's a, I mean, I don't know if you, that's exactly what it does for me. Like photography or the camera more so has become a sort of shield. Like mm-hmm. in very traumatic situations, it functioned as a shield. Seeing my father beat somebody up, seeing my dead grandfather's body being washed. Like, there's so many situations where the camera, it, you know, in the moment allowed me to almost separate myself from what was happening. And in a way, I also struggle with that because it allows me to not feel certain things immediately. And then, like, for example, when I made these photographs of, and this is one of the photographs that are new and is going to be shown for the first time is at the exhibition here in Hamburg, is this photograph of my grandfather's body being washed before being buried. And it would, like, that moment specifically, I remember sitting in the corner of the washing room and me just being like hunched over in this corner with this huge camera in front of my face. And just being so focused on the mechanics of making this photograph, focusing, setting the, you know, light meter, all these things that like distract you in a way. And then me developing the film and not looking at it for a few weeks. And then finally scanning the film and sitting at the computer and like fully just having, you know, crying and really feeling that moment again. So yeah, I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but I know that over time it's become a way for me to like shield myself from certain situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but you also expose yourself, I mean, maybe with a short time delay or a longer time delay, but there is kind of a, would you say it's about truth also? You look at the photos and there's this moment you were part of, but maybe you see something different than you saw while you were taking the photos.
Well, you see a very fragmented idea or like a very fragmented version of what's in front of you, because you're only seeing a sliver of everything around you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't really know how to explain it, because I don't know what it would feel like to be in that moment and feel it right away. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I would have reacted if I just had to witness it without. And it's interesting because I just want to get into this moment because it's sort of a centerpiece of the show, or like the show is really focused on the death of my grandfather and how the sort of patriarch of the family is sort of dissolved over time. And I just want to focus on this moment because it's a centerpiece in the show. And I remember us going into the room, and at first I was told I can't make any photographs of this situation because it is a very sacred moment. And the photograph I do show, I just want to make it clear here that like the photograph that you do see in the exhibition, his body is already covered, and they're sort of they have this white cloth that they're sort of covering his body with. And at that moment, there was light shining through this tiny little window because it was in a basement, but it was shining through and hitting this white cloth, and it surrounded him in this sort of like his body has this sort of white outline around it. And it's a very, there were images in from those roles that were very graphic and very in your face. And I had to remind myself that this was such a sacred moment that wasn't even really supposed to be photographed, that I needed to choose one that sort of felt a bit more ephemeral and felt a bit more metaphorical in that sense. And in the photograph that is shown, you see the sort of outline of his body, but you don't see the full thing.
I asked you if it's a kind of truth. In my imagination, I kind of see like a halo. So that's maybe something really sacred.
Yeah.
Or it's playing with this image.
I mean, I think when something is happening, it's happening so quickly that sometimes the beautiful thing, obviously, within photographs is that you capture a very specific moment. So I'm always imagining like experiencing something, but not being able to really appreciate it to a certain degree because it's happening so quickly. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously the root of my obsession with making photographs, you know? It's like it's an obsession to like hold on to everything and
keep it.
But in a very, at some point in my life, it really became a toxic thing for me. Like this obsession ruined a lot in my life, because instead of me living in specific moments, not just sad ones, but also happy ones, I always felt like I needed to document that moment. And it got in the way a lot of the times, you know, and it like, it also can function as a shield in these very like happy moments, you know, and I think I really had to learn how to have a healthy relationship with photography, because at some point it overtook my life to a point where I just, it almost felt like I was becoming a shell of myself and wasn't there anymore. Like I wasn't present.
So what did you do to change that?
I don't know. I think it was just getting older and realizing that like things are going to change and evolve around you, and that you just have to like accept that, and that you can't capture everything. And it was literally like there wasn't something specific. I think it was just about constantly reminding myself that things are going to happen around you that you can't hold on to. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's still times where those things could upset me or trigger me, but like it used to be so bad that I was in this constant like downward spiral.
Well, you became known to a wider audience through a very personal and intimate story about your family and your relationship with your father. which is also very traumatic. And I mean, that's so out there.
Yeah.
For everyone to see and to talk about. How do you deal with that? Do you sometimes need to distance yourself also from that in a way?
I think the beautiful thing is when you make something so personal and so honest, is that people can feel that and people can relate to that. So even though my situation is hyper-specific and that world is hyper-specific, when people feel the truth in something, I think it's much easier to relate it back to themselves. So it's been beautiful to experience other people that have struggled with their fathers, like coming up to me and having conversations surrounding that. And I think once you let go and just let it all out, it's almost more freeing than just holding on to it. Because that's what I did for a long time. I was making this work for like 6-7 years before I ever showed the work to anyone or showed it publicly, you know, like it was this sort of like luggage that I was carrying around with me. And it, yeah, I think when you hold on to something for that long, especially something so personal and so traumatic, it really weighs down on you. And so for me, it's been a beautiful experience to just let go and not even think about, like, you know, what does it feel like to put yourself completely out there and share all these things? I think that's, I don't know, that's sort of the beauty of it, is that, you know, people relate to real things. And yeah, I'm very, like, at least for me personally, like, that's the kind of work I'm drawn to. And the kind of things I want to experience and see. So,
do you see that kind of work from other photographers?
I mean, I think everyone processes things differently. You know, I don't really like to compare myself in that way. But
or are there other photographers? Do you have like this intensity you see and you think you can relate to that?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain artists that I'm like really drawn to. Not even like, obviously there's so many amazing photographers and artists, but I think what I'm drawn to in the end is really this idea of process and like how, like for example, when I was younger, I mean, I still love Araki. You know Araki? Nobuyoshi Araki?
No, I don't know.
He's one of the most famous Japanese photographers, but he, you know, a lot of people know him for this sort of bondage work. I'm sure you've seen it, like these women tied up in bondage, hanging from ceilings and stuff. But he was also, he's like this person that became so obsessed with photography that he literally documents every single aspect of his life, his breakfast, his, you know, his walk to the grocery store, like every little thing is documented. And I think when I was, you know, at that point where I was so obsessed with photography, something about that felt so, it wasn't even inspiring, but the idea that someone could survive and live for that long with that obsession was really interesting to me. And he, you know, he made these like beautiful bodies of work about the death of his cat. Like it was like, it's like one of the few books that like made me cry, because you really feel the purity in the photographs. Like they're very bare bones. They're not trying to do much more than just document what's happening in front of him. And, you know, the same goes for, you know, he has this other project called Sentimental Journey, where it sort of documents the relationship with his wife and her slowly dying. And yeah, he was one of the few photographers early on that I became really enamored by, and really, yeah, I was just so in awe of this obsession, I think. Another person that I was like obsessed with was like Diane Arbus. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know her work.
Yeah, I know her.
Like she's obviously, you know, sort of problematic, but I think deep down, and this is also because I read her biography, like she became so obsessed with photography that it led her into these specific situations. Like, that idea was interesting to me, that she came from a very different background and then became so obsessed with, you know, this sort of underbelly of New York that she really, you know, and in the end, it was sort of her demise also, like that obsession. But yeah, I really, like, when I look at the photographers that I'm, like, you know, like inspired by or whatever, it really comes down to more like that obsession and like the process.
I wanted to ask you also about your style and technique, because for what I understand, your photography is analog.
Mm-hmm.
How come?
I think it's all I ever kind of knew. It just became, I was, you know, fortunate enough early on to have people that, you know, I used to intern at this like street casting agency, and instead of him paying me, he would basically pay for like 3 rolls of film every week to like, and he bought me a camera, but like he would pay for the film and the developing. And I think from early on, I was able to somehow just shoot film, that it became my only way of really like taking photos. Like I really love the limitations as well,
right?
Because I'm the kind of person that gets overwhelmed really easily. And I think the idea with digital or whatever, because there's this endless possibility of editing a photo or adding things to it, that I really love that I only have these specific film stocks that I can shoot on, and I'm limited to that ISO, and then I'm limited to printing it in the darkroom. And then, you know, even with that, within the darkroom, there's such a limitation there as well, like just on a color spectrum level and what you can dodge and burn, and that's it. And it really, I think I became, yeah, I also became obsessed with this idea of like purity, or like what it means to make the most pure version of an image. So I always try to print in the most neutral way. I try to like really just, I think that's like my, you know, I don't really, I think.
You mean, why not manipulating the colors or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you can do that with mm-hmm. digital too, but also with film, I think so many people are drawn to it for like the aesthetics. And obviously film makes everything look more beautiful. But I'm also just, yeah, I love the idea that I can make a photograph of something and it be all these direct transfers of light. Because even the big prints that I'm making for the exhibition, or any of the, you know, most of the prints, they're all printed directly from the negative. So there's also this interesting through line of light that travels. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to get too metaphorical with this, but there's something beautiful about the idea that what we're seeing is almost this
wonder,
odd like transfer of light that came from that moment, transferred onto the film, and then from the film onto the paper.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
Yeah, it sounds very cheesy, but I was thinking about it last night and like how just how cool that is. Like, just like it's like a, sometimes like we, I don't know, or at least I, like, not that I take it for granted, but sometimes we don't think about these things because they can be cheesy or yeah. But I really find that fascinating. And yeah, it's not a, I also like, you know, in the moments when you're making stuff, there's something beautiful about not knowing what's happening inside the camera. There's something, especially once you get into like making photographs at night or in these dark situations, the camera really experiences what's happening in front of you very differently than it looks through your eyes. And there's something beautiful about just being in the moment and not, you know, taking a photo and then looking at your screen or whatever. You know, there's something beautiful about just trying to be in that moment and, yeah.
And in a way, silencing yourself and then, like, seeing what you captured in a way.
Like, yeah.
Something, it's like a little wonder, I guess.
Yeah, it's a beautiful surprise, too. And sometimes it's disappointing, but sometimes it's, and most of the times it's, yeah, such a beautiful experience that I've honestly, I feel like, not that I've taken for granted, but I think the longer you're making stuff and the more you're shooting and the more film that you're shooting, the less you sit back and appreciate that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, again, it sounds kind of cheesy, but I love that aspect of it.
We just talked about the series you are going to, or the body of work you are going to show in the exhibition, but you're also showing a book, which is called New Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And so who or what is this body of work about?
New Genesis was made in Los Angeles between 2022 and 2025. About a young, struggling mother of three that is basically trying to survive and is constantly being failed by the system put in place to protect people, or supposed to protect people. And it's a documentation of just a woman, again, being failed by the things that are supposed to protect her.
How did you meet that mother? Who is that?
So Sierra Kiss is the young mother in the book. And we just met through Instagram. Like when I first moved to LA, coming from New York and having access to so many people all the time, I really was yearning for that human interaction again and just making portraits of people. And my partner sent me her profile, and then I just wrote her and was like, hey, like, I just thought she looked interesting and was like, hey, I would love to photograph you. And then from the first moment we met, I could just feel something there. Like, I felt that there was something else happening here that I didn't have immediate access to. And,
was this something you could relate to, like a mother?
Oh yeah, I mean that's
struggling.
You know, again, when I'm making something, I try not to overthink why I'm making it. I think that's such a important aspect for me, is to really just go into a situation and trust my intuition and trust my gut that I'm making this for a specific reason, or I'm drawn to this for a specific reason. And obviously, over time, I realized that, like, that stemmed, like, me wanting to make this work about Sierra and her life stemmed from witnessing my mother being abused and her not having anyone to protect her or to help her. And when I met Sierra, it wasn't about me trying to particularly, like, save her or, like, change her life in this way. I just saw that there was this young mother that literally had no one and was just surrounded by abusive partners, that I wanted to just be there for her in the simplest form, for her to have someone that she could rely on, or someone that she could call to take the kids to school or take her grocery shopping or take her to a doctor's appointment. Like, it really came down to that. But obviously,
so you became her friend.
Yeah, at the end of the day, that, like, it, that's what it is. And it's obviously tied, you know, I think people sort of question that idea sometimes, because I think photography is inherently problematic because it's a voiceless medium, and it's a, you're pointing something at someone and you know, showing their life from your point of view or specific sliver that you're interested in. And so in the book, before we go into other things, in the book, what I realized is that I didn't, like, this young mother is already so voiceless and powerless in this world that in the book, we needed to make sure that she wasn't voiceless. So in the book, you have these photographs and this sort of documentation of her life, but at the bottom of the page, you have all her writing throughout the book. So any text in the book is all hers. And that was, all the text was drawn from her Instagram. So on Instagram, on a daily basis, she used Instagram as a diary in a way. She would post anytime she was having a feeling or just went through something traumatic or something was bothering her. She used Instagram as a way to let go of these feelings or like put them out into the world. And so I was, you know, over the 4 years that I was making this work, I was also collecting these screenshots of her Instagram stories. So when it came time to make the book, I had like 700 screenshots, and we slowly built a language around her writing. So we pulled all the text out of the screenshots and then found a rhythm and a sort of like, you know, we really wanted her presence to be felt while you were looking at the photographs. So the text isn't necessarily explaining what we're seeing, but it's explaining or putting you into the headspace of her in a way, or of the things that are, you know, happening and her mental health journey and the things she's thinking about. I don't know, it's a very, you know, text within photography books can always be a bit tricky because usually it functions as a way to explain what we're seeing. Or that's, you know, historically, I think that's where text usually is, you know, how it functions in a book. And for this, we really wanted to make sure that it wasn't doing that necessarily, that you could read the writing or you could look at the photos separately and have, you know, two very different understandings of what's happening.
She took part in the process of, how do you say, curating the book?
I think when you're living inside of a specific situation, sometimes obviously it's very hard to think outside of yourself or see the, you know, see your world from a third person or something. And I never wanted to put that pressure on her for her to, because I think when you're in it, it's already so suffocating that I didn't want to put that pressure on her. So it was more about us, you know, making certain sequences and then checking in with her, like, what do you think about this? Or is this okay? Or are you fine with putting this photo in here? Or, you know, it was more about having check-ins rather than having her be a part of her, you know,
portraits.
Yeah. I just didn't want, yeah, it was already such a difficult thing, I think, for her to see the photographs that I didn't want to put that pressure on her to also narrate that aspect of it as well, or like put that. And I gave her that, you know, I was always open with her if there were things that didn't work or things that she wanted to change around. Like, that was obviously very important to me. But yeah, it's tricky when, obviously, like, when you're making something about a real person that has real feelings. And that is also, I think what we need to remember is that I think a lot of the times when we see a book, we think of it as the past. We think of it as this thing that has somehow been resolved. And the reason why we try to put out, you know, because a lot of people are like, oh, why are you putting this book out so fast? You just finished taking the photos or whatever. Obviously, I'm still making photographs of her, but people were asking me that. And then I came to that conclusion to put it out because I really wanted to be able to actually change her life in some way. So like me being there for her and doing all these little things, like, sure, that's fine. That's helping her, you know, survive somehow. But like, I really wanted to put out this book to spread awareness and be able to raise money and really have a platform and a visual, like, understanding for people to do that next step, for me to be able to raise money so we could move her out of LA and move her to a place where she can be safe and for the kids to be safe. And I think, and all this stuff, I think it's a sort of complex thing, because I think naturally when people hear me saying this or when people read about these things, it may come off like I have this sort of like savior complex, or like I'm trying to save her. But I know her enough that it doesn't need to be that. I know her enough that this is something that she wants. I'm not forcing this on her. I'm not making her do something that she doesn't want. And I think for me, it's about opening up that opportunity for her to have that, you know, if she wants to move, if she wants to get out of a situation, if she wants to do these things, that opportunity is there. And I think that's what's important for me, is that I can open that up for her somehow.
So did something change in her life after?
Yeah, so we launched the book on April 19th in New York, and I had it was an artist talk or like a conversation between myself and this photographer, Donna Ferrado. And the evening sort of functioned as this conversation, but also a fundraiser. So we raised over $10,000. And it was a way to spread, I think. So I also invited, a person that could bring a more statistical or like factual understanding of the world we're living in and the world that women are living in America and the, you know, just statistics surrounding abuse and domestic violence and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So that evening was a way for us to raise money to actually do the things that I would have already tried to do if I had the money, you know? Mm-hmm. So now with this money, we can get her out of LA. I don't want to say where we're going, because it's, yeah, just for privacy reasons and to protect her, but to move her and the kids away and really just have a fresh start. Because what I realized is it's not just her that is going through this thing, but it's also, you know, it's also thinking about the children that are affected by this and how, you know, they may end up having kids and I don't know, all that stuff. Again, it comes back to the trauma idea, like, mm-hmm. all that stuff trickles down, and we forget how, you know, even if you can just try to change one person's life, that affects so many other lives. It's not just that one person. And sometimes, especially for me, like, I'm not a, you know, I think celebrities or really very rich people can make a bigger difference and can really change a lot of people's lives. But for me, it was important to just, you know, focus on this one person that I know that I had immediate access to and that I could really see and that I could really feel. And for me, that's such a beautiful thing to realize, is that I can, through my work, I can also not just change my life and my, you know, relationships with my family and the people around me, but that I can also try to do that for somebody else. And yeah, it's been a very eye-opening experience to like make something about somebody else, because it's all I've ever known is just making work about myself. Mm-hmm. And processing things in my life. But it's beautiful to know that photography also has the power to make a change somehow, you know? I think we're so overstimulated in this day and age with content and with imagery that sometimes we just become numb to it, and we become so used to it that it doesn't affect us anymore. So that's been a really beautiful thing, sharing this physically with people in a book form, is like seeing people experiencing it in real life and going through it and reading, and especially women that have also suffered from abuse or have been in traumatic situations, like really relating to Sierra and to, you know, even though, again, it's such a hyper-specific story about her life, people can feel that pain and people can relate to that pain. And that's been, it's been really beautiful. And also just to, like, I don't know, I'm kind of rambling here because I think this is a very sensitive subject matter and I just want to make sure that everything is sort of being spoken about. But
sure.
Also, I think historically, and this is to go back to the photographer I did the conversation with, Donna Ferrato, we spoke about this a lot, with how historically a lot of the conversation surrounding domestic violence for women has always fallen onto women, like for women to make that work or to talk about it. And obviously other women are going to feel more safe with women, especially if they were abused by men. So, you know, naturally that's how it's going to happen. But I think for me, it's also about, like, as a young man, like, taking responsibility and not even doing work for other men, but just that men are also, you know, at the end of the day, men are the root of that pain, you know? And I think it's also our job to be part of these conversations and to speak about these things and not just rely on women to have these conversations. Because I do believe that, and this is like very hard to say right now because the world is in such a terrible place, but I do believe that we have a younger generation of men, at least men that I'm surrounded by, that are very conscious and very self-aware and are trying to be better men and are trying not to pass down these specific patterns. That was a sort of long rant, but I think that sort of puts everything into context.
That's a beautiful ending.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
In der Arbeitsweise von Abdulhamid Kirche wird deutlich, dass Fotografie für ihn nicht nur ein Denk- und Erfahrungsraum ist, sondern auch persönliches Wachstum und Verantwortung bedeutet. Alle weiteren Informationen zur Ausstellung Rotting from Within und zur 9. Triennale der Fotografie Hamburg findet ihr in den Shownotes. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis zur nächsten Ausgabe von Das ist Kunst, sagt Jumoke Olusani. Das ist Kunst ist eine Produktion der Deichtorhallen Hamburg in Kooperation mit Byte FM. Redaktion: Priska Dolling, Gabriela Basso und Matthias Schönebäumer. Die Musik kommt von Alex Blanke. Das Logodesign stammt von Gabriela Basso. Moderation und Produktion: Jumoke Olusanmi.